The field turns for home.
They're at the top of the stretch.
Top of the stretch.
They're into the stretch.
And here they come into the final furlong.
Final furlong.
Final furlong.
Into the final furlong.
They go inside the final furlong.
This is the final furlong on HRRN Live.
HRRN Live.
It's Trainer Talk Wednesday. Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone, and welcome to this Trainer Talk edition of the Final Furlong Show here on HRRN. We do welcome all of you tuning in coast to coast on Sirius 93, XM 209, and Internet Smartphone Channel 961. Happy to have you with us on this Wednesday evening. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four, our producer Lee Delapina, ready to roll for the next hour as we talk with trainer Tom Albertrani coming up in the first half of the show. And in the second half, a special encore performance of our interview with trainer Dallas Stewart, who, as we know, is on that road to the Belmont Stakes this year with Golden Soul. You'll hear that coming up in the second half of the program tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun to talk to Tom Albertrani, find out his story, and see how he got into racing and where his passion lies.
Well, it's a great story. He's a 55-year-old native of Brooklyn, New York. So many great trainers coming out of that part of the country. He has trained 350 winners with earnings of more than $25 million. Of course, the man who conditioned 2006 Preakness winner Bernardini. Brilliant Speed, who was third in the 2011 Belmont Stakes. He's been around some outstanding horses in his career. Can't wait to talk with him. Tom, thanks so much for taking the time.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem. Hey, first of all, when you hear me mention those kinds of gaudy numbers, 350 victories, $25 million in career earnings, tell me about that and what goes through your mind.
Well, I've been very fortunate to be around some great owners and some wonderful horses to train. And, you know, without them and their support, you certainly can't accomplish those kind of figures. But hopefully we could have that continued success over the next several years. But I'm just great that I was able to be in that position to have those kind of stats.
Now, you became a fan of horse racing, like many of us, at a very, very young age. Take us back to the beginning and tell us how Tom Albertrani got hooked on this sport.
Okay. Well, I was 13 years old, and my uncle Jack Batamarco was a trainer at Belmont Park and got me introduced into the game at that early age. And I started walking horses and grooming horses weekends, summers away from school, and you know, I did that for a couple of years, and I just, I always thought of becoming a jockey, so I pursued that goal, and I guess I rode my first race when I was, I think, 19 years old. I started riding and had a couple of years of little success in the New York area in Jersey, and that's what first got me started.
When you started riding, What was that like for somebody that really hadn't, you know, done much of it up until 19 years old?
Well, you know, I just, you know, worked around the horses for a few years before that, you know, grooming horses, and naturally I was light enough. I was a little bit tall. I think I went through high school. I only weighed about 98 pounds, I think. So my weight was no problem, but my size was certainly going to be a factor later on. So I kind of hurried up to try to, you know, ride some races at that age. But I know it was a short career until my weight got to me, and wasn't riding a whole lot of winners at the time. I think I was probably around 21, 22 at the time. So that's when I altered a course into getting into training horses, or as an assistant trainer through Mark Cassie, who I was galloping horses for and got to know Mark. When he was young, I worked for his father breaking horses in Ocala at Norman Cassie's farm, and that's how I got to know Mark and became an assistant trainer for him back in the early 80s.
You know, Tom, I can remember that I used to bring the racing form to high school with me. I was much more interested in reading that than reading any of the textbooks. Were you that type of kid that was always more interested in being at the racetrack and being around it than you were even in being in school?
Yeah, I mean, I was really thinking, you know, my career was going to be on the racetrack. I even my last year in high school, I accelerated my courses so I could just graduate in my 11th year. I used to go out to the barn and work for a few hours before I even went to school. So, yeah, school was definitely not on my mind when I was 17 years old. So it was just a matter of how soon I could get out and start getting on top of horses.
It's tough for a city kid to really be around horses except at the racetrack. That's kind of what happened to me in my life growing up in L.A. There was really no place to see a horse except for the racetrack. Did you always have a love of horses?
No, actually, it was, you know, my uncle trained horses, and that's how I got involved. My dad was like a $2 weekend bettor, and he was loved the sport, and he also kind of guided me in that direction and supported me throughout my career when I rode. So luckily, Belmont was only 3 miles down the road, which made it easy to get to as well.
So that's a little bit different take. It was the sport of racing, actually, that got you interested more than the animals themselves.
Well, both, yeah. I mean, I enjoyed being around the animals as well. You know, I just thought it was fantastic just being around them and watching them. And, you know, then just everything about the whole backside, you know, I was very enthusiastic about being around them.
Tom, what do you remember about the first time you were ever given a leg up aboard a horse on the backside at Belmont?
Well, naturally, you're kind of on pins and needles your first time. A lot of nervous energy running through your body, and you're just hoping that you do well. But it was very exciting. You know, it took a few months really before I got started. And I knew it wasn't going to be a long-term career, you know, with my size, but it's just when you're 13, 14, and you kind of got a goal, and you want to pursue that goal. I was just able to and happy that I was able to do that.
Who was the first horse that you ever rode?
Gosh, I'd have to really think way back on that one.
Come on, you never forget your first.
the first one I rode, but. Yeah, I couldn't really tell you that one.
How about your first winner?
My first winner came up in Boston on a horse called Stack the Deck. And I can't recall the trainer's name at the time, but that was my first winner back, I think it was in 1981.
That's amazing. That's a long time ago. I bet you can remember the first winner that you trained, huh?
Well, the first winner I trained was officially 2003, I believe, when I came back here from overseas. I was overseas working with Godolphin, Sabin, Soror, and I officially took out my trainer's license in 2003. And that's another one that that just kind of slips through my mind right now at the moment.
Yeah, and you mentioned the name Mark Cassie. You mentioned the name Bill Mott. I mean, you were around so many great horses working with those individuals. Talk about those years, Tom, and what you learned from both Mark and from Bill.
Well, Mark was really the first guy. He was riding me on a few horses, and you know, he was the first one to tell me, you know, why don't you just stop riding and become an assistant trainer? So for me, it was a pretty easy transition because I had the background of being around horses and I had a good foundation, and so it was very easy for me to switch, you know, become an assistant trainer for Mark. So I became Mark's assistant trainer for a few years when he was up here in New York training, and that's how eventually I got introduced to Bill Mott. Bill would ship horses like Heatherton and Cephas Beauty up to New York to run some big stake races, and asked me to gallop those horses while they were in New York. And eventually, when Mark Cassie left New York, I stayed in New York, being that was my hometown, and Bill Mott came to New York with the Firestone horses, and I had asked him for a job as an assistant, and that's how I got involved working with Bill Mott.
Nobody better to learn from than the Hall of Famer Bill Mott. He joined us on Trainer Talk.
A great horseman, and I was very privileged to to be with him for 9 years as his assistant trainer.
Yeah, well, he joined us on Trainer Talk a few months back, and it was fascinating to hear his stories. We basically just got to Cigar, and we had to wrap up the interview, and we'll have to get him back on again because he was so, so good. But what was it about working with Bill that you really took away from it that you still use in your operation today?
Well, you know, Bill is just a fantastic horseman. He, just the way he goes through every horse, head to toe, pays a lot of attention to detail, every little thing about him, and that kind of passed it on to me where, you know, we thoroughly look over our horses and just a sense of horsemanship, really. That's the, I think, the whole key, being able to know your horses and try to read what they're telling you and just, you know, keep them healthy and sound. I think that's the basics of what he passed on to me. And I try to do the same thing.
He always has, not always, but at least in the last 10 or 15 years, had some spectacular clients. And you've done much the same. You've trained for some great people. Talk about some of the people that have given you horses over the years.
Well, I've had a great deal of support through Sheikh Mohammed, who I've been associated with him for quite a number of years, and he continues to support my operation. I'm very grateful to him. And I think when Bernardini won the Preakness, that kind of put me on the map and opened the doors up to getting a lot of other outside clients, such as Charlotte Weber, who has given me opportunities to be around some very nice horses, Brilliant Speed, who's won the Bluegrass Stakes, and here in the Belmont, and trained a nice filly for her, Zell Impressive as well. So she was another supporting owner. West Point Thoroughbreds been very supportive, and just without their help and support, you know, you wouldn't get such nice horses to train, and you need those kind of horses to put you on the map.
Tom Albertrani, our special guest on Trainer Talk here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Tom, you were hired by Godolphin in, I guess, 1995. What do you remember about that day you got that phone call?
Very, very, very surprised when I first got that phone call. Actually, Bill Mott broke the news to me first. He was given a call through Godolphin, and they had basically, I think, asked his permission if they would wouldn't mind if they called me and sat down and talked to me and maybe offer me a job to go overseas. So that's how I first found out about it. But I was pretty much very surprised with the fact that they were looking to give me an opportunity as an assistant trainer overseas, which turned out to be a very good opportunity for me to go there and really be around some great horses with the Godolphin stable.
How long did it take you to say yes?
To figure it out that I wanted to go. It didn't take me long. I mean, it was just what an opportunity. I mean, how many people get an opportunity to go overseas and work around horses and see some of the best racing in Europe? I mean, I was just very fortunate to be one of those people that were able to get that phone call, you know.
That's like dying and going to heaven. When you do that, you learn so much. Talk about some of the things that you learn in the contrast between the way they do things in Europe and here in the United States.
Well, everything's very different there. You know, you just the morning training, the gallops are different. You're not training on a round oval track every day. You're training uphill and different type of race courses in your everyday training practices. It's very different, and you're using a lot of turf opposed to training on dirt a lot. So you really get to know your turf, you know, in the morning. If it's too firm or too soft, you have to alter your training schedule going to the all-weather tracks to train over. But very much basic, you know, it's just, you know, your horsemanship and looking after the horses and you know, just keeping them as healthy as possible and getting the best results out of them. That's basically it, though.
Have you taken some of those things that you learned there, Tom, and tried to apply them to what you're doing here in the States today?
Well, it's a little different. You know, it's the training is a little different, but just as a horseman, It's like I always say, you just, you know, keep them healthy and sound, and they usually do the rest, no matter where you apply your training techniques, whether it's there or here. But, you know, just being lucky enough to be around good horses and have them perform well, that's really the most exciting thing.
American trainers and of course, handicappers are obsessed with workout times and the like. Do you incorporate that, or are you more European style with how horses train?
I'm pretty conservative about how fast my horses go. I mean, a lot of people ask me, you know, they say your horses don't really work that fast in the morning, and I tell them it's not a matter of them working fast. You know, we they might be a little bit on the slower side, and they have strong gallop outs, so I'm never worried about their fitness by the way we work them. But, you know, it's always about keeping them healthy and keeping them sound. Just you don't want to overdo it, and you don't want to undercook them. So there's just that medium, the happy medium that you want to find when you're training them and breezing them. So that's usually kind of my method.
Tom, you mentioned the name Bernardini, winner of the 2006 Preakness. You said he pretty much put you on the map. Take us through the Bernardini years and talk about going down that road with him.
Well, he was a pretty special horse. Even the first day he came to my barn, I mean, there was a few people that in the Darley operation that always thought a lot of the horse, and, you know, they considered him a pretty nice horse. And he just had that striking look about him as soon as he entered the barn. Like, you just looked at him and say, wow, you know, this horse really looks the part. And as so many horses look the part, that they don't perform, but this one certainly did. And just watching him in his training, he had all the makings of being a good horse. And he never started as a two-year-old. He was a little behind schedule in his training. We had some minor setbacks, coughing or whatever, and he didn't actually make his first start until he was a three-year-old in January. And I remember his first race. I didn't think he could ever get beat his first race. Jerry Bailey rode the horse, and I told him, I said, this is a really nice horse. I think you're really gonna like this horse. And Jerry Bailey was on the brink of retirement, and I was thinking, well, after you ride this horse, you might have second thinking about retiring. But after he ran fourth, and Jerry came back and said, well, I don't know, you know, I think I'll just retire after this. But after that, you know, the light bulb came on, and it was just pretty good. He was on a pretty good roll after that. He won every race except for his last race in the Breeders' Cup.
Did you ever talk to Jerry afterwards, and is he sorry?
Yeah,
that
we joke about it, you know. And I think a lot of people gave him a lot of static about being, you know, your only jock that ever got that horse beat. You know? So it's pretty funny stuff. But, you know, we always considered him to be a pretty nice horse, and I'm really glad that he's doing well as a stallion.
Have you been out to see him very much?
I'm sorry?
Have you been out to see him very much on the farm?
I've only seen him on a couple of occasions. There's times when he actually goes to Australia. So he's been doing double duty in his stud career. So I did see him on a couple of occasions at John Abell Farm, yes.
Who are some of the other horses?
You look good enough to bring back in training, too, by the way.
Tom, what are some of the other horses that, when you look back on your career, whether it was as an assistant trainer or now as a trainer, that you're really never going to forget and are always going to hold a special place for you?
Well, I think I'll always remember, you know, probably the, you know, back when I rode races, you know, riding probably my first winner would always be a highlight. And I think, you know, naturally the Bernardini winning the Preakness, that will always stand out, especially on the day it happened with Barbaro getting injured. So that's always going to be a highlight in my career. But, you know, just we've just been very fortunate to be, you know, having some good horses in the barn, and hopefully we'd have some more memories along the way. But every race, you always think back, and they're all pretty special.
What's your philosophy, or what kind of horses do you really like to train the most? Are you a two-year-old guy? You like the older horses? You like grass? What's your favorite?
They're all. And I think having a nice dirt horse. I think Yogi's looking for that three-year-old derby horse. I mean, the two-year-olds, I don't really push on them that hard, and I let them just come to hand as they want. But I think my favorite type of horse is probably always going to be that three-year-old that maybe could take it to the derby. That would probably be my number one horse.
Now, a lot of people may not realize, other than the fact that you referenced it at the beginning of the interview, Tom, that your brother is also a trainer. He trained Breeders' Cup Sprint Hero Artax in 1999. Talk about that relationship with your brother, and is it a great kind of sibling rivalry?
No, not so much. I mean, Lou pursued college for a few years. I think his goal maybe was he had thought about being a veterinarian and got away from the track for a couple of years in between. Came back. Another good highlight was the day he won the Breeders' Cup with Artax. We won the Turf Classic with
DeLamy.
Trying to think, DeLamy the yeah. same day for Godolphin. So it was a pretty special day for both of us. But Lou's a good horseman, and he's training out in Delaware. Doesn't quite have the numbers that he'd like to have, but he does a great job with horses.
Yeah, how cool is that to have Breeders' Cup winners on the same day?
That was really special. I mean, I think I was more excited for him than myself winning the race, but it was a really good day.
Tom Albertrani, our special guest on Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Now, you mentioned the Bill Mott days. We talked about some of the horses you were able to be around at that point, but also special for you for another reason. Your wife, Fonda, was the regular exercise rider for Horse of the Year Cigar, two-time Horse of the Year Cigar. Talk about how you met her and how that all came about.
We actually met working at the same barn. Fonda was galloping horses for Joe Canny, who was on the backside of Mark Cassie, and we just kind of met a little bit working in the same barn, small talk around the barn, and eventually she got a job working for Mark at the same time I was assistant training for Mark, and we just kind of hit it off, and I think we were married a year and a half later, so that's how we first met working in the same barn together.
Now, is she involved with your operation today?
Not at the moment. She's busy with our two daughters. So she, when we first went to England, she stayed on galloping horses for Godolphin for a year. And then she was just busy looking after the girls. So she plays a little role in supporting me when I'm down in the dumps.
That's a key role, believe me. Every trainer needs that. He needs a support system when he's down in the dumps because it's not easy.
How about the kids, Tom? Are your daughters involved with racing at all, or do they have an interest in doing what Dad does?
They have a little interest. They both did a little bit of riding. My older daughter, she's a student in Albany. She comes down to the tracks and works in the administration offices during the summer while she's away from school. And my younger daughter, she's not really involved as I was at that age, but. You know, kids right now, they got minds on their social life, their lacrosse games, and you know the rest. So they're not too interested, really, in working down there at the track.
Yeah, I've asked other trainers this on this program. I'll ask you the same thing. But if one of them came to you tomorrow and said, Dad, I want to be a horse trainer, what are you going to tell them?
Well, my oldest daughter did mention the fact she said she wanted to gallop horses, and I think I put a quick note to that, so that was taken right off the list.
Oh, come on, she wants to follow in Dad's footsteps. What could be more humbling than that?
But they, you know, they're very excited to come to the races, and they like watching it on TV if they're not there, so they. They do take some part in following the barn horses. They pretty much know which ones are in the stable, and they keep a keen eye on them when they're running on TV, though.
Yeah, that's great. They're probably really rooting for a derby horse for you, because there's nothing that girls like better than to put on a fancy dress and a nice hat and go to the derby.
That's right. They're actually getting ready for the Belmont. So hopefully we could have our horse Freedom Child ready to go in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, talk about him for just a minute, Tom. Obviously, this show much more about you as opposed to the horses you have in training. But obviously, a very nice horse, and that last win, very impressive.
He's a very nice horse. You know, we were very unlucky in the wood when the assistant starter got tangled up and never had an opportunity to let his head go at the start, so he was a non-starter. But, you know, we were actually hoping for a good performance that day that may have led us to the Kentucky Derby. And once we saw that incident at the start, we knew everything was gone from there. And then we just regrouped with him and brought him back in the Peter Pan, and he was a very impressive winner that day, winning by 13 lengths. So hopefully we could bounce back in the Belmont and, you know, run a huge race that day.
A lot of people have talked about him running on an off track and thinking that promoted him, but I didn't think that was the case. What's your feeling? Fasten is just as good as the off?
I think he is. The way he ran in Florida, he ran a huge race, breaking his maiden by 10 lengths that day. And that track could tend to be a little cuppy at times. So I don't think it was just a one-off where he ran a huge race on the slop. But in saying that, if it comes up muddy, it's not going to hurt my feelings. but I think he's just he's a good horse, and I don't think it should make a real big difference on how the track is that day.
Well, Tom, this has been a lot of fun to visit with you, hear your story. I'm sure there was so many other things we could have gotten into, but we're just about out of time. Really do appreciate it and look forward to catching up with you next week up at Belmont Park.
All right, great. I enjoyed it.
All right, thanks so much, Tom Albertrani, our special guest here on Trainer Talk. Second half of the show, our encore performance of our interview with trainer Dallas Stewart. He's going down that road to the Belmont with Golden Soul, so you want to stay tuned for that coming up in just a minute. And, of course, Tom and Dallas going to receive complimentary product from EPO Equine and Flair Equine Nasal Strips. We're back with the second half. Trainer Talk right after this. I'm here with Dr. Jim Chiappetta from Flair Equine Nasal Strips. One of the hot-button topics that's out there now is EIPH. Talk to me about that.
Mike, EIPH is an acronym for exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhage, or what is commonly referred to as bleeding. When exercising at high intensity, some of these horses can hemorrhage a little bit into their lungs. Flair strips have been shown to reduce that bleeding and keep these horses healthy and their lungs healthy during performance.
To learn more about keeping your horse healthy, visit flairstrips.com. That's flairstrips.com.
Attention horsemen, are you getting the most out of your equine athlete? All natural EPO Equine could be the answer. EPO Equine is the most potent blood builder on the market. Top trainers like Scott Lake and Steve Margolis are reporting dramatic improvements in their horses. Easy to use and clinically tested, EPO Equine is the product your horses need for speed, strength, and stamina right out of the gate. Call 215-501-6880 or visit epoequine.com.
This is Daily Racing Form's Dan Ullman with some big news about DRF bets. Thousands of players like you have already made the switch to DRF bets, and now there's an even bigger reason for you to join. Free DRF PPs. That's right, for the first time ever, get free Daily Racing Form PPs when you wager with DRF bets. These are the DRF past performances you know and love, and DRF bets is the only place you can get them free. So why wager anywhere else? With DRF bets, you'll get the best sign-up bonus in the business, free guides and analysis from DRF's top handicappers, breaking news, analysis, and wagering on the go with DRF and DRF Bets Mobile, one-click multi-ticket wagers with DRF Ticketmaker, and now free Daily Racing Form PPs. Only one place gives you the PPs you prefer when you wager, DRF Bets. Join today and wager with the most trusted name in racing. And if you sign up right now, you'll get a $125 cash bonus. Find out more at drf.com/bets. That's drf.com/bets.
Thousands of thoroughbred racing fans from over 50 countries read RacehorseReport.com on a regular basis. RacehorseReport.com offers great stories about racing's top players, both human and equine, Bob Kiekheffer's weekend stakes preview and his Monday racing roundup, weekly spot play selections, and successful betting strategies for racing's biggest days. From a neophyte fan to a hardened horse player, everybody can learn a little something at RacehorseReport.com. And for the best and up-to-the-minute racing information, follow Racehorse Report on Facebook and Twitter.
The Belmont Stakes.
Here at the wire, Drosselmeyer, who gets first due to the shadow of the wire. Josselmeyer. Josselmeyer, an upset winner. Rule on ice, stay thirsty and brilliant speed. It's a shocker in the Belmont. Ruler on ice is the winner. Union Rags unleashing a final furious rally to win the Belmont Stakes.
Saturday, June 8th, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, only on HRRN.
Welcome back to this Trainer Talk edition of the Final Furlong Show here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, our producer Lee Delapina, all with you in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, and really looking forward to this second half as we visit with trainer Dallas Stewart, the 53-year-old native of New Orleans. He joins us live from the fairgrounds here today. Dallas, thanks for taking the time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, happy to have you on board here. And look, you have been somebody who has won races at the top level of the game, and you've won them at the bottom level of the game. You excel at all levels, and it's been a remarkable ride for you. As I mentioned earlier, this is a show where we talk about your history and your background and how you got started. So take us back to the beginning, and how did Dallas Stewart get hooked on horse racing?
Well, just, you know, basic love for the horses, and started riding early on and started working at the fairgrounds when I was 15, galloping horses. And, you know, just been loving it ever since and just worked my way up. I worked for a couple of different people down here in New Orleans and hooked up with Wayne Lucas in 86 and traveled around with him for about 11 years and then started on my own in 97. So it's just been just the love of the horse and enjoying the game, and it's been great.
Did you start like so many others where you were just a fan and then kind of got into it from there?
I really didn't know anything about horse racing, just, you know, riding horses, and fell in love with exercising on the farm, and, you know, just moved over to the track and, you know, just took right to it, knew it's what I wanted to do at an early age for sure.
Well, Louisiana has such a great culture of riders and racing and of course fun. I mean, you're coming off one of the biggest weekends ever in New Orleans, but talk about starting out at the fairgrounds. I mean, that's pretty big time, and how that had an effect on your career.
Yeah, I mean, it was always nice horses here, and, you know, I was young, 15, 16, still in high school when I was working out here at the track, and, you know, just figured that this is something that I wanted to do and thought I was pretty good at it, and and went on with it, so it was it's been great, you know. Just loved it all since I was young.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Dallas, but doesn't it go back a few years earlier than that when your grandfather gave you a horse? Didn't I read that somewhere?
Yeah, it was, you know, 13, 14, just a riding horse, and they had some race horses at the stable where we were growing up, and we started helping those guys. You know, they got some free help, so they taught us how to exercise the horses, and you know, next thing you know, we were 14, 15, ready to go to the racetrack. So that's the way that went.
Jude mentioned that fun weekend down there in New Orleans with the Super Bowl. Did you get a chance to go?
No, I didn't. We just went to some friend's house and enjoyed it that way. But it was great. It was a great game, and looked like the town was rolling. And so it was pretty neat.
Does that help the fairgrounds when they get an event like the Super Bowl in town? Do you get more people out to the races?
Sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. It just depends. You know, there's was a lot of free concerts and a lot of things going on in this city. So I didn't really think the Super Bowl helped it much. But sometimes, you know, like with the Final Four, if Kentucky plays, you know, there's people that will come to the races and stuff. So it just depends.
Well, it's a great place to race, and you've had a lot of success there. How many years have you been training at the fairgrounds?
Well, I've been training on my own since 97, but before that, in the early 80s, I had a couple of horses that I owned and trained myself, probably in 84, 85, somewhere right up in there. So, yeah, a long time.
What led you to want to become a trainer? You mentioned you were galloping horses and working as an exercise rider. What finally spurred you to say, okay, I want to become a trainer and do this as my profession?
Well, I just figured it was something that I was good at, something that I liked, and something I could handle. And, you figure in life you want to do something that you like and that you're good at. So I just tried to put those two together, and hopefully it served me well.
So your first job, your first trainer you ever worked for was who?
Probably a guy named Connie Tisistro, a local gentleman here, an older guy downtown. He's no longer training. But, I was just kind of exercising horses for different people, kind of like what they call freelancing. But he was probably the first guy that I worked steady for that taught me a lot about horses' legs and how to do them up and how to take care of them and the basic care of a horse.
Well, you worked for Wayne Lucas for 11 years, you said, and that had to be way better than going to college.
Yeah, I mean, it might have been like military work. I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe not that bad, but it was pretty regimented. So
you got to learn how to rake the shed row in herringbone pattern.
Yeah, that was just a little bit of it.
How'd you end up working for Wayne?
Well, actually, Randy Bradshaw brought some horses down here, and I went over and talked to him. And he was going to Minnesota. I was looking to make a little bit of a change. I wasn't wanting to go back to Louisiana Downs. And he said, sure, he would take me on. So I went up there and started working for Randy Bradshaw, who was the assistant for Wayne Lucas at the time. And we hit it off real well. And he said, hey, you ought to think about trying to come on steady with this guy and see if you can work your way up the ladder. He says, I think you can do it. So I went out to California, joined him out there, and one thing led to the next.
You know, we've had several Wayne Lucas disciples on this Trainer Talk show, Dallas. Todd joined us a few weeks back, and Kieran was on here when we first launched the show. But they all have that favorite D. Wayne Lucas story. Do you have one?
The favorite one. I'd probably be my experience with Winning Colors. I mean, not really a story about him or, you know, just working for him. I mean, I was an exercise rider and worked my way up to like a foreman spot and into like an assistant spot. But I was the exercise rider for Winning Colors and started galloping a week before the Kentucky Derby, and we got that done. So, you know, that was pretty special. But I got a lot of great memories working for him, a lot of fun times. So, I mean, I don't know about any particular ones, but, you know, that would stand out as a real special one to me personally.
I can imagine Winning Colors so brilliant and then going on and beating the boys in the Kentucky Derby. How about your favorite Winning Colors story?
That would probably be it. You know, like, I got on her a few days and she went really well. And then she was in the stall. We were waiting to go out. And a guy that was had been galloping her named Otto, who did a great job with her all through her early career in California. And when she came into the Derby, she just got really, really tough. And sometimes a switch of a rider can make that little bit of a difference. And it doesn't matter if one rider is better than the other. You know, if they're both really good exercise riders, sometimes a little switch, you know, can be a plus to keep the horse settled down. Sometimes. So they decided to go with that, and I was the guy. And Otto had been galloping her, but she was in the stall and she was standing at the front of the stall and she was just shaking her head and you could just see that she was going to be a bear that day. And he looked over at me and he said, eat your Wheaties today, big boy. And I said, I'm going to show you right now what it's all about. And every time I took her out there and galloped her and brought her back. And Anyhow, when I see Otto from time to time, I'll ask him, I'll say, eat your Wheaties, big boy.
So describe that race and that moment as she's coming down the stretch, and obviously it's elation when she wins. But talk about that and describe what you were going through.
Well, I mean, we just thought she could win it back, you know, way back. She was just so strong. I mean, probably to this day, maybe the strongest horse I was ever around on a daily basis, just so strong. And you know, she just took the lead, and Gary did a great job, got her out there, settled her, and just I mean, turning for home, I just knew she'd be tough to beat because she was just so fit and ready. So, you know, it was just total elation, and I was very proud to be a part of it, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's something that's irreplaceable, but you've had plenty of stakes winners of your own. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Well, yeah, it's been good. You know, I've fortunately, you know, I've owned pieces of a couple of them that have won some big races. The first good one we had was a horse named Nasty Storm. Owned her with some guys in Louisville, and we sold her for $1,000,001. So that was a good, you know, she won some good races. I think she won 4 or 5 stakes. And the next one was Lemons Forever. Of course, I owned a piece of her, and she won the Oaks, and we sold her. So, you know, just those being a part owner and winning some big races is where, you know, it's pretty special. So, and I've won a lot of other, you know, big races that, you know, maybe that I didn't own, but were special to me, and been fortunate to train some nice horses, and got a couple of nice colts in the barn right now. I don't own a piece of them, but they're very, very nice horses. So,
is there more pressure or less pressure when you own a piece of a horse that you're training, Dallas?
Oh, I don't think that it's more or less. It's just a matter, you know, trying to get the job done. It's, you know, it's like a puzzle, putting it together, holding it together, and, you know, hopefully the pieces don't fall apart on you. I don't think it's pressure either way. Just, you know, trying to get the job done is the challenge.
I always laugh because there's a lot of owners that think that the horse gets more special attention when the trainer owns a piece of it. And that couldn't be further from the truth. Usually that horse goes in the worst stall, might have the worst groom.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we try to do a good job with all of them, and then hopefully we can, you know, keep somebody happy.
Yeah. It really cracks me up that they figure they're going to take an edge by making sure the trainer has a piece.
Well, they feel, I think the other side of it too is if they feel like they lose and you lose too, that's a good thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, another horse that took you on a fun ride was Dollar Bill. Talk about him for a little bit.
Yeah, he was a real special sweet horse. He trained really well, ran second his first out at Saratoga, and then came back and won. And, you know, he had some hard luck throughout his races, but you know, he was all hard. He tried well. Should have won the Louisiana Derby down here. Had a really bad trip, and you know, he's very competitive in some good races and a fun horse to be around. He was just a beautiful horse, and I was just glad to be around him. He was a sweetie.
You trained for Mr. Young for a lot of years, William T. Young. Talk about that relationship and what that did for your career.
Yeah, you know, I started out working for, you know, with them, with Wayne and with Grindstone and a lot of other good horses, and just to develop the relationship over the years with that, with those guys. And Mr. Young gave me a few horses to train, and it just built over that time. And, you know, with him and his family, they was always supportive, so supportive, and just great people to train for. And, you know, can just be glad to say that I trained for him in my life. It was fun.
Dallas, what are some of the things that you learned when you were working for Wayne that you're still incorporating into your operation today?
Well, you just got to be really dedicated and stay on task. And, you know, even when things are, you know, it's like a roller coaster up and down, stay on task, stay on, you know, stay on, and, you know, believe and know what you're doing is good. And don't forget, you know, the basic care of the horse and take care of him and do the right thing. And it'll all come out sooner or later.
Yeah, this is a game where they say that there's the highest highs and the lowest lows, and you've obviously been to the top of the mountain, and you've had times where things have struggled, just like every other trainer. One thing that came up as I was watching a lot of the conversation after the Super Bowl, and people were interviewing several of the Ravens players, and they said, was it difficult to maintain your confidence when San Francisco was making that big comeback, and did you lose confidence? How about for you as a trainer, when things aren't quite going 100% the way you'd like them to, is it difficult to maintain that confidence, and how do you keep that confidence?
I don't think it's difficult to maintain it because I love it so much. So it's not about the money for me. It's just, you know, I want to train good horses, and I want to do well, and I want to do everybody a good job. And, you know, so I never lose confidence in myself or the people that have been working for me for years. And, you know, we just get up and carry on every day. And, you know, sometimes we have good weeks. Sometimes we have slow weeks, slow months. You know, sometimes it's a slow year, but you just keep on working. And, I mean, I do it because I love it, and that's been good to me. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, there's nothing better than going to a job that you absolutely adore. It's like you don't work a day in your life, really.
Yeah, I mean, and I love every aspect of it, you know, so it doesn't bother me to do a horse up, to walk a horse. I don't gallop anymore, but none of it bothers me. I love every part of it. I'm excited. I'm excited every morning to go to work and to be a part of what I do, for sure.
And that's a great
whether I've got 10 horses or 100. I love it. It doesn't matter.
That's a great example to your help, too, when you're willing to get in there and do a horse's legs up or, you know, muck a stall or whatever. The help really appreciates the fact that you don't ask them to do something that you wouldn't do yourself.
Yeah, none of it bothers me. I like all aspects of it. No problem.
Trainer Dallas Stewart, our special guest here on Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, all presented by Bullet Train, standing at Wintergreen Stallion Station. Dallas, when you look back throughout your career, whether it's working, coming up as an exercise rider or with Wayne or working on your own, what are some of the horses that really stick out to you? You mentioned Winning Colors. We talked about Dollar Bill and Nasty Storm. Who are some of the other horses that really stand out and why?
Well, like Lemons Forever, you know, she gave us such a big race that day. She was way back, and she passed everybody at their fastest point. You know, she just kept running, and, you know, she came right on the right day. And that's the special part about the game, that if you get, you know, the right horse on the right day and the big race is there, you know, you can get the job done. And she was special. It was a nice filly for Terry Finley. I trained named Sweet in the Net. She won 5 stakes, and she was a very special horse. A horse for Overbrook named Clockstopper. He was a real, real hard knocking horse. Unbridled Lane, she was right there, you know, on the right day. Let's see who else. There's been a lot of them, but you know, I mean, I got 2 nice colts in my barn now. I'm hopeful for them, so. You know, they're pretty much on my mind the whole time right now. So, but there's been some good horses, and they've all been, you know, I've been fortunate to train for really, really nice people through my whole career. I've been associated with good people that have given me good horses, and I'm very appreciative of them to entrust me with their horses, and hopefully I've done them a good job, you know.
What about a horse that people don't know that you might have done your best training job, or a little horse that you developed, you know, that nobody really knows about?
Well, you know, I don't want to leave Macho again out. You know, he was a special horse too. That's one that came to mind. You know, and he was one that, you know, I mean, he ran a great race against Rachel Alexander, and that was a terrific, terrific race. You hate to see any horse lose that race. Unfortunately, it was mine. But, I mean, I don't know, Jude. I can't really come. There's been a couple through the years that maybe have gotten hurt, you know, early on, that I thought that really had a lot of talent and, you know, could have gotten to the big time. No real name comes to mind, but I know there's been a few that, you know, that I had high hopes for, that maybe injury or bad luck got a hold of them here and there. But and a horse named Silverfoot, he was a really nice horse one. The Louisville Handicap 3 times in a row. So, but like I say, I've been very fortunate to train for nice people, you know, very good people.
And Dallas, you mentioned Unbridled Elaine, winner of the 2001 Breeders' Cup Distaff. Talk about a little bit more about her and what that ride was like.
Well, it was kind of crazy because the guy that owned it, I mean, he fired me about 3 times. He rehired me a couple weeks before that race, and it was just kind of wild. And you know, I had the horse early on, he fired me, then he rehired me, and then I won the Breeders' Cup, and then he fired me again. I think he might have hired me again after that, I can't remember. But you know, the guy was always nice, he paid his bills, and you know, it was just a crazy ride. But she was a great filly, and Pat Day gave her one great ride that day. He was in trouble, and he got her out, and I was it was kind of a little bit of a funny story. Here's a funny story about Wayne Lucas. Like, he had Spain in the race, and they were coming down to the wire, and when they showed it on the live, you couldn't really see who won it. And then when they slowed the showed the slow mo, I was standing right next to him, and we were both leaning, like you were, you know, like you lean into the wire. And then when they hit the wire, I looked over him and I said, "Got you, big boy." He said, "Did you give me?" I said, "Yeah, for $2 mil." And he said, "Oh, go take your picture."
That was a good one. I said, I got you, big boy.
The student had become the teacher.
Well, it was just one good day. It was a good day on a good payday. So he didn't need the money. It didn't matter.
That's a great story.
Dallas Stewart joining us here on Trainer Talk on the Final Furlong Show on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Dallas, is there another trainer or a couple of trainers that you have kind of a friendly rivalry with like that with Wayne, where you like to kind of needle them a little bit when you get to beat them?
No, probably just him.
Do you still have that relationship today?
On certain days, so that, not all the time, you know. So, but you know, it's nothing personal.
We were talking the other day about the Lucas camaraderie, and you know, Todd and Kieran and you and all you guys all pull for one another, even though you know you're competitors. You still like to see the other guys do well, and I think that's a great tribute to all of you.
Absolutely, you know, I wouldn't say that. I will say that we're all still friends, and you know, we worked hard together, you know, we try to beat each other as hard as we can when we're in against each other, but I would say there wouldn't be any bad blood between any of us.
Dallas, this isn't the type of show where we typically spend much time talking about your current horses and training, but twice now you've kind of teased us with the two nice colts in your barn. Talk about them, and who are they?
Well, the two nice horses from Mr. Fipke. One is a horse named Golden Soul, and he ran second in the LeCompte. And he's pointing toward the Risen Star, and I just think he's a really, really nice horse. So, you know, he's a horse that wants to stretch out. I think he can get a mile and an eighth and a mile and a quarter, and I think he'll be fine. And then the other one is a perfect title. He's a grandson of Personal Engine, and he's had a couple of seconds here going long at the fairgrounds, so I've got some really high hopes for those two colts.
And obviously it would mean an awful lot to anyone to win the Kentucky Derby, but I know you living in Louisville now, it would probably be even a little extra special, wouldn't it?
Man, I'm trying every year.
Well, Perfect Soul, he ran a good race the other day. He looks like he's coming around for you. He's pretty high up there on the Derby rankings, I think.
He's a really good one, believe me. He's going to, once we get running out a little further, a mile and an eighth and a mile and a quarter, he'll sort some horses out. He's pretty nice.
Dale, let's spend a few minutes talking about your family. You're married. You have a couple of kids. Talk about them.
Well, I've been married for 31 years and got two great sons. And they're really not into the horse business or anything. They like to go to the races and stuff. And they just not, you know, never really took to it. So you can't really push it upon them. But they enjoy going to the races. My wife loves to go to the races, but they really don't know anything much about horses. But actually, my oldest son did work for me a little bit, but he's in college, and I don't think he has any desire to work, you know, with the horses or anything. But you know, it's fun for him to come to the races, and they're great kids. It's been a little challenging because they've had to move around a little bit throughout their school years, but they both handled it well, and they're both great, great kids.
What would your son say if I asked them who their dad's favorite horse was? What's the favorite horse of their dad?
I would think, I don't know, you'd have to ask them. I think they'd say Limits Forever.
Yeah.
What, or maybe my two again, one or the other.
When you're not at the track, what do you like to do? What are your hobbies?
Well, I mean, pretty much my routine is pretty basic. I get up, you know, go to work, enjoy work, just enjoy the hell out of work, and love to eat lunch down here. Lunch is a big thing in New Orleans, you know, just eat like crazy for lunch and take a nap, go pick up my little boy at school, work out. I like to work out. I like to jog, sometimes fish, and go back for feed time, and that's about it.
What's your favorite lunch place in New Orleans?
I got to be a place called La Uza's, right by the racetrack. It's the best. Best gumbo, best shrimp po' boy in the country.
Wow. We'll have to try that next time we're down in New Orleans.
What's the place that Neil Pessin took us to?
Oh, Brightson's. We love eating at Brightson's.
Well, that's pretty fancy, but this is just good food, man. Yeah. I mean, that Brightson's is good, and it's a, you know, it's expensive, not expensive, but it's really good. But this is just like a lunch place that's just out of this world.
You know, it's amazing. We ask that question of just about every trainer that comes on the show. What do you like to do outside of racing? And Dallas, I think the only person that had another hobby was Ian Wilkes, who said he liked to play golf. Everybody else said, my life is these horses.
Yeah.
You know, that's
well,
it.
Well, I mean, you know, we do a lot of things. We've been, you know, I've taken my kids on a lot of vacations and a lot of different things, aspects like that, you know, because that's what you're supposed to do. But, you know, I don't golf. I do like to fish a little bit. I enjoy other sports. But just enjoying my kids and my family life is probably where it's at for me.
Yeah, there's not a lot of time in the day and in the week even. You know, you're always working on the weekends. And so, you know, Mondays and Tuesdays, you know, are kind of special with your kids. I mean, a lot of trainers, you know, pick up their kids at school and try to do family things with them on Mondays and Tuesdays, because the rest of the time you're working.
Yeah. And then watching them play sports, both my kids play soccer, the oldest one played soccer and the little one's playing now. And, so, you know, just try to be a part of their life like that.
All right, Dallas, one final question before we let you go. Finish this sentence for me. My career highlight to this point is?
Oh, my career highlight. Well, I'll just give you two things. Are you talking about a race or just the highlight?
Whatever it is.
You know, it's just being a happy person, loving what he does all the time. And I don't like losing, but I just like what I do. And I think that's pretty much sums it up for me. I just love what I do. That's the highlight for me.
There he is. He's training.
And I'm fortunate to be able to do it and do it well.
And he does it exceptionally well. It's trainer Dallas Stewart. Nice enough to spend some time with us here tonight. Tell us his story. He has trained 676 winners for his career. Just an outstanding job. Dallas, thanks so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks for taking the time.
All right, Dallas Stewart, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, all presented by Bullet Train. And a much different story than Rudy Rodriguez in the first half of the show. But really interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, Dallas took a more traditional route to training horses, but 11 years with Wayne Lucas, I mean, that's a long, long time.
Yeah, and if you're going to learn how to handle a good horse, nobody better than D. Wayne Lucas at that time. He has just a barn full of them.
Yeah, well, he's got a barn full of them again. You never know with D. Wayne when he's coming up with the next good one. But it's not only the horses that you learn about. It's the clients and you get to meet people, and you know you're with the upper crust all the time, and you learn how to talk to the clients and make them understand what racing's all about and how they can improve their stables and all of those things. Very, very important aspects of the game. And who were we talking to the other day that said that it was their father that was gracious enough to tell them to get the heck out of the barn?
I don't remember.
Can't remember who that was.
You know, but it was interesting when Dallas started that interview and he started talking about working with D. Wayne. He said it was more like military camp. And you got to know Wayne quite well working in California. That's his operation. That's the way he handles his business.
Yeah, it's a very tight ship. And even though I never worked for Wayne, I picked up a few little things. He always had a dry erase board in his office with all of his horses listed on it. And I have done the same thing my whole life with my training horses at the farm. All the horses' names are up there, and I know what, you know, where they are, what stable they're in, what paddock they're in, whatever it is. And that was something that I learned from Wayne. Everything had a place. It was all, you know, in its place. And the shed row was impeccable. I mean, you could walk down there any morning. It was raked always. Matter of fact, he used to envy me, my son. My son, Miles, would come and rake the shed row in the herringbone pattern that I referred to, which is
really
Wayne's favorite thing. When Miles was like 5 years old, he knew how to do that.
Wow.
And Wayne used to ride by on his pony, and he'd yell at Miles, "Hey, if you ever get sick of working for your dad, you can come down and work for me."
Well, if you missed any portion of this Trainer Talk show, you can go back to our website. Tomorrow, a podcast will be available at horseracingradio.net. Hear our interview with Rudy Rodriguez and with trainer Dallas Stewart. You can also catch us on iTunes, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. We are back tomorrow, 3 to 7 Eastern Time, with our live racing coverage from 3 to 6, and then our listener call-in show from 6 to 7. Looking forward to that, taking your calls here in our HRN studios.
It was Mark Hennig whose dad said, get out of here and go to work for another trainer.
Well, we're going to get out of here, too. We're back tomorrow, 3 Eastern, on the Horse Racing Radio Network. For Lee Delapina and Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening.
Good night, Barbados.